Welcome to Calling It, everybody. Big episode for you today. Alex Barth, along with Alex Lovewitz. We are recording just before the 8 o'clock hour on Tuesday, June 11th. We're powered, as always, by CLNS Media. Lovewitz, what a couple of days we've had, huh?
It's been wild. I mean, you go from the Bruins really being at the brink of elimination, everyone thinking that they were going to lose. At least you and I picked them to lose in Game 6. And then they play a really wonderful game. They turn everything around. Another masterful performance by Tuukka Rask. And another game in which Jordan Binnington looked like he was not up for the contest.
And then, I mean, we went from that to the Ortiz news breaking that night. We'll get into that in a little bit. But I do want to start. We got a Game 7 tomorrow, probably today, by the time a lot of people listen to this on Wednesday. And I want to go back to something I said in the last episode, something I said before Game 6, that whoever scored the first goal in that Game 6, I felt like was going to win, which ended up happening. But not just win that game, win the whole series, because you mentioned Binnington kind of shaking in the moment, and he gave up some soft goals, and now he's got to go into TD Garden and win a Game 7 at 25 years old after starting the year in the AHL. That would be one of the, if not the great sports story of the year, if he can pull that off, because that place is going to be loud. It's going to be wild. The Bruins got to get pucks on him early, first and foremost. Test him and see where he's at, because I don't think he's going to be in a great place when that game starts.
Yeah, I think we saw that's exactly what works. You need to challenge him. You need to make him feel uncomfortable. And the way you do that is try to control puck possession. Which they definitely did, and get shots on net. They didn't have as many shots on net as they did in game five, but it's also the quality of shots on net. It's taking advantage of those situations and trying to capitalize, you know, when the game is really on the line. If you're watching, they scored one goal in that first period. It was scoreless in that second between those two teams, and then they kind of blew the door open in the third period. We need clutch play, and I think that's why we saw a W in Game 6.
And that you mentioned that clutch play, the guy who's really got to step up, and we're sort of waiting on him, is Patrice Bergeron. And there's obviously a very good chance Patrice Bergeron is injured. That's just kind of what he does in the playoffs. He plays injured, but you hope he can just pull one out of him. And, I mean, this is it. And for all those guys, everybody's obviously playing hurt at this point, but if Patrice Bergeron can step up, that was... For the last couple of games 4 and 5, we had said the Blues played about as well as they can play, but the Bruins really didn't rise to the occasion. That's why the Blues won. We finally got to see the Bruins play to a level that we're accustomed of, and wouldn't you know it, they blew the Blues out on the road nonetheless. So they still have another gear to hit, and a lot of it ties in with that first line. You saw Marchand and Pasternak start getting things going, each with a goal in Game 6. And by the way, a couple of just pretty, pretty goals from those two. Marchand on the power play and then Pasternak on the rebound. But if those two have found it, and then Bergeron can get going, it's going to be pretty. I think this game, whichever way it goes, and a lot of people are saying, oh, it's been a close series, there's going to be a close game, you know, we're probably looking at overtime on Wednesday night. I actually kind of feel the opposite about this game. I think whichever way it goes, you're looking at a similar game to Game 7 in 2011, in that whoever gets the lead, they're just going to get it early and run away with it. And I think, once again, the first goal of this game is the most important, more so than usual. The Bruins are 12-4 this year in the playoffs when they score first. The St. Louis Blues, 13-3. So those are two teams that score first a lot and depend on scoring first. The first goal in this series, in this game, is absolutely massive.
Yeah, 100%. You mentioned a couple guys there in Marchand and Pasternak, and we saw DeBrusque have a decent game. It's been, you know, one of multiple for him. And Bergeron.
He started to find it again recently, I think.
He really is. He's playing well. Zdeno Chara looked a little bit better in that Game 6. And you have a bunch of guys who have been stepping up, including Brad Marchand with as you call it, a pretty goal there in the third. Patrice Bergeron is really the only guy who you're waiting on to see if he does wake up. I'm with you in the sense that I think it is an injury. I don't think he's going to be someone who you see a lot of production out of in Game 7 tomorrow night or tonight, whenever you're listening to this. So you got to rely on other alternatives. I think they have something going right now. I think the fact that Marchand has kind of shaken off the cobwebs and started to produce for the first time in a while, and you have guys in the defenseman group that are stepping up as well. They just seem like they're ready to go. They're geared up, and the fact that they responded so well in an elimination game, it shows me that they're ready to go game seven. I don't know what's going to happen. I tend to think it's going to be closer than you do. I don't think it's going to be a blowout one way or another.
I just have this feeling that it's going to, one team's just going to steamroll the other, just runaway train.
And I hope you're right if it's the Bruins that end up doing that.
Well, yeah.
But we'll see. I don't know.
I thought I muted my mic.
No, you're good.
Live sneeze for y'all. Keep going.
So this is a this is gonna be fun to watch. I mean, no matter which way you look at it, it's gonna be a physical game. You have a St. Louis Blues team. I've done that like three times during the series. They've been rough. They've been chippy. They got nothing to lose this time around. No games to be suspended in. Yeah, I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tight, and I think it's going to be probably the best game of the series.
Well, look, if it is tight, huge advantage to Tuukka Rask. I just want to remind everybody now, and then the number's been out there for elimination games, which is all well and good. And obviously, there's more pressure in elimination games. This one doubles as both an elimination game and a potential clinching game for the Bruins. Tuukka Rask in clinching games this postseason. This is astronomical. These are Tim Thomas-esque numbers. And that might even be unfair to Tuukka.
Tuukka, yeah.
Compare them to Tim Thomas. Three games, 3-0, 96 saves on 97 shots in two shutouts. In three chances to advance this year, Tuukka Rask has taken care of business. The first time he has not once needed a do-over. Once the Bruins win three games, they've won the fourth every single time. And he has more shutouts than he's allowed goals in those games. Can he do it one more time? That is now the question.
Well, so it sounds like you think that the blowout's going to be Bruins, you know, topping the Blues.
So that's just a stat from the past. That's what that is. That is a stat from the past.
You're not putting much weight in it.
What I am saying is that we are looking at a different Tuukka Rask this year, but it's, even if it is a different Tuukka Rask, it is still Tuukka Rask, and the way he plays, it can change on a dime. I think all kind of been bracing ourselves for that one game where he falls apart, and knock on wood, it hasn't happened. I don't see why it would happen in game seven to get this far and then not be able to handle it. The point I was making is Rask has been at his best when they've needed him to be at his best in this postseason, when they've needed to wrap series up. He's also won two potential elimination games, by the way. Obviously, the Bruins are still going, but he's actually been better in the clinching games than the elimination games. But my point being, you know Rask is going to come out tomorrow with his – this goes back to the point I made at the top of the show. You know Rask is going to come out tomorrow, today, whenever you listen to this, Wednesday at 8 o'clock, more like 8:25, because we know how the series has gone, with his A-plus effort. We know he's coming out with his A-plus effort. What does Jordan Binnington's A-plus locked in look like? Because we've seen it, and it's not good enough if the Bruins have their top line going to beat Tuukka Rask the way he has played. It's just, if he plays equally as good or even slightly better as he's played all series, and Rask is the guy he's been in these spots this playoffs, and the Bruins have their first line, the Bruins are going to win the game.
I think, yeah, you said it. It's
because there's a lot of ifs, but
This is just to simplify it. The Bruins play well. They play the hockey that's been winning them games throughout this postseason. That they're winning in game seven. And that means Tuukka Rask playing at the level that we're used to seeing him. And by the way, just a side note, if we were going to see that drop off, wouldn't it have been at the start of the series? Wouldn't it have lingered over from that 11-day layover?
But the thing with Rask is it's been predictable, but you're right. And I just want to clarify something. You know, the two of us, we've been talking about sports, together for what, like 7 years now, independently a long time.
Don't say that.
We're not saying that if the Bruins play well, they will win. We're a bit beyond that take. The point I'm trying to make, and I think Lebitz, you're trying to make it too, and I want to spell it out plainly, is that if the Bruins reach a certain level that we know they can reach, they're going to win no matter what the Blues do, because they are just a better, more talented team.
Bingo. That's what it, so if they play well, they play the level that they should.
I didn't want it to come across as, well, if the Bruins play good, they'll win. Yeah, no, duh.
It's as simple as, and sometimes the cliche is true. The better team, if they play, you know, better, they're going to win.
It's Holcomb's razor. Sometimes the most obvious answer is the right answer. But there is a certain point where it doesn't matter what the Blues do.
Sure.
The Bruins have a chance to win this series tomorrow at home, regardless of which Blues team shows up, which is huge because it wasn't that way in 2011. And it certainly, obviously, wasn't that way in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Vancouver was the better team in 2011. The Bruins played their asses off and got some help from Roberto Luongo laying an egg. We saw what happened in 2013. The Blackhawks, for the last 17 seconds of that series, unfortunately, realized they were the better team and took advantage. The Bruins are the better team on the ice Wednesday night. They need to use that to their advantage.
Well, yeah, and just to, you know, put more into this, and you kind of mentioned this, I think you know that Tuukka is going to play well. At least I think Tuukka is going to show up. He's going to have a great game. He's not allowing
David Price holding all the cards moment.
Yeah, I think, and for me, I don't think he's given up more than two goals, and I can see him giving up one goal.
If he only gives up two, there is no reason for the Bruins to not win that game. They at home, game seven, the Bruins should score at least three goals tomorrow night. If it's one of those games where it's a 1-0 game the whole way, but if Rask is allowing two, the Bruins should score at least three.
So if this is how you know you're going to win the game, a definite, if that first line gets multiple goals, you're winning that game. That's all you need to know.
Well, Bruins are 26-1 all time in the playoffs when Brad Marchand scores a goal.
There you go.
That's like the Patriots have won 18 of the last 19 when Julian Edelman scores a touchdown. It's similar. But that's not just some fluke number. Like Doc, when they talked about it on the broadcast the other night after he scored, they made it sound like it was just some fluke thing. It's not. There's a reason the Bruins always win when Brad Marchand scores in the playoffs. It's because it means the first line is on, and when that first line is on, you cannot beat the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's going to be great to watch. I am worried about the physicality that the Blues might show.
They started, and I said this on the show last time, the Bruins needed to climb in the mud with the Blues. They did it a bit in game six. I think they'll be fine with that in game seven. It's going to be a bar fight of a game.
Absolutely.
But I think the Bruins will live up to it.
So, but what if, you know, another defenseman goes down? What if Chara gets hit in the jaw? What if, I'm just thinking, you know, this is a team that has benefited off of injuring players and taking cheap shots. We'll see what happens. I do expect them to kind of come out full force and embrace that heel mentality. It just comes down to the Bruins, you know, scoring, getting production out of that first line. Tuukka Rask is going to do what he has been doing.
That's a good point. And look at what the Blues did. Absolutely cowardly final minute of game six by the Blues, by the way.
Oh my God. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the end of the
Super Bowl.
Yeah. Patriots Seahawks.
But it's worse because that was like raw frustration. And to an extent, I mean, it was cowardly. You were with me that night, right?
Yes.
Something broke down my bedroom door after that fight.
Oh my God. Well, you did taunt him a little bit.
Oh, but come on.
No, he deserved
it. Bandwagon fan. He had been a Seahawks fan till that week.
No, I agree.
Anyway, this kid who, by the way, once got in a fight in an intramural hockey game, like a week before the Super Bowl, decided to be a bandwagon Seahawks fan. And after that fight, I opened my door. It was all the Patriots fans were in my room, Lebowitz included.
Except for one. There was one Patriots fan that was not in your room.
All right. It was all Patriots fans in my room. There were, what, four of us, right? And everybody else could go be with his girlfriend at
five,
the time.
Five of us.
Five of us. Everybody else was out of the common room, including the Seahawks fan.
Yeah.
Seahawks fan, air quotes. So after the fight, games in hand, I open my door first time all night and say, no wonder this kid likes the Seahawks, referencing the fight he had gotten into. I turn around, go back to celebrate, turn back around, look at my door. It's been broken in half. The kid charged the door. But anyway, what I was saying is it's different. I can't believe I just told that story.
Well, bro, that was an incredible story. That was even more fun to witness. That was hilarious.
Did you see the door break through? Because I went back to it.
I was standing behind this person.
You were inside?
What? I was there.
No, but were you in my room or were you?
I think I was in the living room.
So because I just opened the door, yelled it, and shut it. I don't think anybody left my room because the game wasn't over yet.
Are you sure? I don't. Maybe you're right. I thought I saw it from a different point of view. Or maybe I'm misremembering.
The point I wanted to make is what the Blues did was worse because that's sheer frustration. That's the end of the Super Bowl. Game's over. The Blues were doing that for a reason. They were trying to take players out of Game 7, which is wrong. So I don't think the Bruins will forget that. And I think they're going to bring a level of physicality the Blues are not expecting.
So regardless of what we see in Game 7, the handshake line, is that affected at all? Yeah, no, I know.
It's always squeaky clean.
Yeah, it's got to be, right? I mean, we've seen so many chippy series, and I can't remember one leading to a scrum. But it's the Stanley Cup. I feel like this has been one of the more physical series, and there's been a lot of bad blood. It's really been entertaining as hell. And I think the fans deserve this to go seven. We talk about the matchups, we talk about the physicality and storylines, but this has shaped up to be a really good Stanley Cup final, and I'm just excited. I'm just pumped.
I think that's a good note to leave it on. First game seven in Boston, championship game seven in Boston since '84. So it's going to be a good time. Where are you watching?
I don't know. You know what? I've always been a guy who's liked to watch games solo. I really enjoy sitting down with a beer and some popcorn and edge of my seat, just, you know, getting into every play. I don't like distractions, but I'm not opposed to watching it with friends. I haven't decided. My friends will probably try to drag me to a bar or something.
My brother's actually flying in from Pittsburgh just for the night.
Oh, really?
Watch the game, yeah. So probably down by the garden. Although I was technically in Fenway because game on is in Fenway inside the building. I was technically in Fenway when the Sox won the World Series. I was in the building.
How early did you have to get there for game on?
We got there about an hour before the game, but we were standing the whole time.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be packed.
Yeah. Oh, no. So I'm sending my brother's flight gets in at 10:30 tomorrow. I'm sending him down to the garden like 2 o'clock. Find a spot. So I was in Fenway. I was in Atlanta when the Pats won. I was in the building. So I'm trying to get as close to the garden tomorrow as possible. See what happens.
Going to North Station, dude. Just sitting in the train station.
That's not a horrible idea. although I don't think they let you have beers at North Station anymore. We're like way over on this.
If you got a brown bag, you'll be fine. I see people doing it all the time.
I do want to get into some David Ortiz stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously horrible what's happened to him. That guy of all people, all the baseball stuff aside, he's built like half the schools on that island. He's done so much for so many people. You don't need to listen to me say it. Go check out what Pedro Martinez said last night on MLB Network. It was truly moving. I don't want to turn this into an in memoriam or anything because it sounds like he's going to be okay. The last update I saw, again, we're recording this about 8 o'clock. On Tuesday, last update I saw was he's at MGH. He's been talking to his family. He took a couple of steps today. He'll be there for the next week or two. So I just simply want to – and we kind of did this when he retired, and I made an open for it and everything. And I'll try to get that up on YouTube if I can find it. I don't know if I still have the file, but just favorite David Ortiz moment.
For me personally,
yeah.
It's very tough. You know, one moment I'll always remember is in the ALCS, eighth inning, what was it, game three against Joakim, what the hell's that
Soria.
Guy's? Soria. Changeup down the heart of the plate, grand slam. One of the greatest calls of all time by Joe Buck. He gets a lot of crap.
No, he says the same thing. If you go and watch just all of Joe Buck's home run calls played out.
I love
it.
It's
the exact same call every time.
I love it. I just love at that moment the voice.
David O'Brien had the call.
He said everything three times. I don't understand.
But what else are you going to say in that moment besides his name? That was just such a great
moment. That's why I liked what Joe Buck said. He let the moment speak for itself.
Fair enough.
So that's one of my favorite. Obviously, he had countless in 2004. That was a huge moment. Yeah. Everyone's going to point to 2013. Obviously, this is our effing city. It's just countless. It's really hard to pinpoint one. But the guy was he's not to say was, he's still around, but he was always a great leader when he played. And he's someone who was always larger than life. You've heard that phrase thrown around, a ton the past few days for good reason. He's one of the biggest larger than life figures we've seen in Boston ever. let alone, you know, in our lifetime. You look at Tom Brady, not a ton of charisma. He's kind of a stoic.
Oh, I don't know about that. They're different kinds. Ortiz, I think, is more approachable.
Well, okay. I'd say Ortiz is not like the superstar type that Brady is. Brady's like A-list type. And so is Ortiz to an extent. But he's just got a much bigger personality. And you never seen someone so open and eccentric kind of embrace the city of Boston like a David Ortiz. You have your figures like Larry Bird, who was hilarious and you know, someone people loved. Bill Russell didn't like the fans when he played here. Ted Williams was notoriously anti-media, wasn't huge into, you know, soaking into, you know, warming up to the fans. Bob Uecker might be the only other guy, but right. He wasn't as big of a figure as Ortiz. Ortiz is really on his own in a specific category. Maybe Pedro's with him there. But to see this happen, it's surprising that someone would want to do this to a figure like that who's done so much charitable work and whatnot, and been such a role model. But it's sad, and I think the one silver lining is, you know, he'll be all right. The new reports that he's walking, he's taking steps, he's even smiling. He'll be fine, and I, you know, thank God for that.
One like really under the radar Ortiz moment, but just something I always loved. There was a game in, I want to say it was 2017, it was 2016 or 17, and they were playing the Rangers. It was the middle of the summer. It was that one week, I think it was 2016, where they had like 4 walk-offs in 5 days or something. It was right around this time of the year. It was it was 2016 because it was the year that they were walk-off city or whatever. And it was the 9th inning. The Rangers were up 1 and runners on 2nd and 3rd, 2 outs. And they walked Dustin Pedroia, who was red hot at the time, to get to Ortiz. They put there was nobody on. Sorry, there was nobody on. The Rangers were down 1. The Rangers were up 1. They put the tying run Pedroia on. They intentionally walked him to get to Ortiz. First pitch, Ortiz knocks it out of the park, walk off, which imagine walking somebody to get to Ortiz in a clutch situation.
Just and idiotic. Then
when he rounds the plate, this is what I'll always remember. When he rounds the plate, he gets mobbed and they ripped his jersey off. And he was wearing a t-shirt under his jersey that said Boston Strong on the front. And it said famous as F star star K on the back with a silhouette of him flexing. And there's a picture of it online. And I just always thought, I spent like 2 years trying to find that shirt. It doesn't exist. Like, you can't buy it. But that was just so, and nobody ever commented on it. Nobody ever said anything about it. It, like, do you even remember this?
No, I 100%. Because you mentioned the shirt, and I remember the walk-off. I didn't remember the exact scenario.
Nobody
getting ripped off.
Nobody ever talked about that shirt. But imagine, like, if any other athlete was wearing a shirt that said famous as fuck right on the back.
Well, he got away. Dude, the FCC.
But that's my point. Is like, Ortiz was the only guy who could get away with that. And it's just such a – talk about a power move.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and this – the speech was one thing. This was some random game in June. It was on his shirt, and he didn't know people were going to see that shirt. It was under his uniform. He just wore that because he knew he could get away with it. And because he was you talk about people being the man. David Ortiz is the man. He's the guy. And well, I mean, it's just so many great memories that he brought us, and that he literally famous as fuck.
Yes. And that's hilarious. And I mean, you talk about a guy who could get away with anything for good reason. This is our effing city. The FCC sent out a statement that week, and they were like, no, that was like completely appropriate.
Right, that was the appropriate use of it, yeah.
Guess what? If that were, I don't know, John Lester or...
literally anybody else.
Anybody else on that roster who said that, they'd be fine. Anybody else in
baseball couldn't have gotten... He was the only one who could have gotten away with that. I genuinely believe that.
Of course, yeah, definitely. I mean, you have your A-Rods, but people don't like A-Rod. Yeah, you have your Derek Jeter, but he has his image. Ortiz was one of a kind, is one of a kind.
Right. It just, if Jeter's saying it, it would sound forced. When I say Ortiz is the only one who get away with it, he was the only one who could get away with, like, do it and get away with it. Jeter, they probably would have let him, but it would have been weird and out of character. It was totally in character for Ortiz.
No one listened to Ortiz say that and be like, you know what? Their kids watching. How dare. Right. If Jeter had done that, it would be, it'd be mayhem.
Right. And nobody was surprised Ortiz said it either. I think we're all happy he said it. I don't think anybody was surprised he said it.
Absolutely. It was appropriate. It was a great moment. And you know, it's one of the things you look back at during that season. I think everyone wants to look at 2004 And that was incredible. You know, his second year on the team, and he played a huge role and, you know, continued to play a huge role after that. But 2013, that was really Ortiz kind of at the helm as a leader in the clubhouse. And they did something that was extremely improbable considering the talent that they had. He's was a lot of the reason for that. Obviously, they had a lot of high character guys. It was an emotional season. They rode that wave, but he was really the nucleus of that team. And he really, you could argue that he was the nucleus of the Red Sox from, you know, 2003 all the way to 2017.
Right. All right. Obviously, we'll talk more about David Ortiz as warrants, but, you know, let us know your favorite moments on Twitter at Calling the Podcast. Real quick for the final thought here, I want to get this in. So there, Justin Bieber over the weekend just randomly called out Tom Cruise to a fight. Tom Cruise, who's 31 years older than him. And I don't know what's going to happen with that, but it got me to thinking, and now it's going viral on Twitter. How would you fare in a fight against a celebrity 31 years older than you? So Lebowitz has a list. I have a list. How we're going to do this, Lebowitz, is I will give you somebody 31 years older than me. You tell me who you think would win in the fight. Then you tell me somebody older than you, and I tell you who I think, if you could beat them or if they would beat you. And I'll start, because I'm the same age as Justin Bieber, with Tom Cruise. Who wins in a fight, Lebowitz?
Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise would hand your shit to you.
Jumped right to that.
Oh, my God. Tom Cruise would beat the ever-living shit out of you. My language. He'd beat me. He'd beat me up, too. I'm a lot bigger than you. I think
you are. That's fair.
So it's he would beat a lot of people. The dude, you know, Mission Impossible. He's just played every action. He's the biggest action star ever. He's short. You'd have height on him, I think. So maybe you could finagle something. Try to, you know, keep your distance and just strike whenever you see the opportunity.
5'4".
He's probably 5'6".
All right, a couple inches on him.
Maybe 5'7".
All right.
Okay, my first one. I mean, this is easy. If you Keanu Reeves.
Oh, Keanu, you're not even going to see it coming. Like,
no.
You can't challenge Keanu Reeves to a fight because he will sense you about to challenge him and end you before you can get the challenge out. So
Neo and John Wick? I mean,
yeah,
come on.
No, you're toast. All right. How about Charles Barkley? Me versus Charles Barkley.
You're picking Charles Barkley would throw you out of a window.
No, but hang on. Listen to my strategy.
Okay.
I'm going to run around a bunch. I'll probably tire him out pretty quickly. And then when he's gassed, I'll just go to town on him.
Well, here's the thing. If you go after him, once you think he's gassed, once he gets a hold of you, he's not letting go. And I think he could throw you around.
Barkley. When he's gassed, he's gassed.
I think he still has that grip strength. And he went toe-to-toe with Shaq. He's not. He's going to be ready
to
go.
That's fair. I don't know. I think I'd have a better chance against Barkley than Tom Cruise, for what it's worth.
Okay, maybe.
I think I get him winded, and once you get somebody winded, we saw it with in the Joshua Ruiz fight. You get somebody winded, anybody can win. Anybody can be world heavyweight champion. Who do you got? Who's your next one?
Nicolas Cage.
Again, like just a complete psychopath.
He is a psychopath. This is why I think Nicolas Cage would probably beat me in a fight. I don't think it's a definite thing. I think I could hold my own against him. He would fight dirty. Like, he would scratch at my eyes.
Oh, absolutely.
And he'd bite me. Like, he would do
a
lot of
weird
stuff.
Demons and
all of
that.
He's not afraid to get down and dirty.
All right, how about Johnny Depp for me?
I'd take you over Johnny Depp. I think Johnny Depp's a weirdo. And I think he'd shy away from confrontation.
Okay, who do you got?
Okay, I'll go Jeff Bezos. This should be easy.
Oh, yeah, you know, actually, that's like...
What?
Jeff Bezos is gonna have a lot of resources.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. He.
You're gonna have to fight off about 1,000 Amazon drones before you even get to him.
Well, I don't think it's gonna be like drones or anything. I think if it's me versus him, he still has some sort of an advantage given his wealth. Like he definitely, you know, like Keith Richards used to do blood transfusions and just put young people's blood in him. I think Jeff Bezos probably does similar stuff. Like
there's also that picture of him walking to the helicopter, looking like a total badass.
Yeah, I still think I'd take Jeff Bezos. I think if it's just a street fight, I mean, he's going down. He's going down. My gut tells me, I'd take him.
Okay, let's do two more each. Bob Odenkirk, better Ooh. Call Saul.
Bob Odenkirk, that's a good one. I think you would take Bob Odenkirk because I don't think
really.
I don't think Bob Odenkirk's a fighter at all. I don't think he's a fighter whatsoever. I think that he's the opposite of a fighter. So, yeah, I think I would take you in that one for sure.
Okay, who do you got?
Okay, there's a couple here. This one, I'm just going to throw this one out there because I know this guy would beat would probably murder me with his bare hands.
Okay,
Russell Crowe.
Again, another crazy.
Why are all these people 31 years older than me? Like, I don't understand it. Russell Crowe would knock me out and he wouldn't stop.
No. I mean, from Russell Crowe's fighting around the world, South Park.
Fighting around the world. He played Cinderella Man. I mean, the guy played Cinderella Man.
Yeah, no, you're toast against Russell Crowe. All right. Last one for me. There's a couple good ones on this list. I want to end on a strong note. How's this, Lebowitz? Larry the Cable Guy. Is he still a celebrity, technically?
Oh, my God. He's huge down the South. He's massive. He's still, get it done.
Me versus Larry the Cable Guy. Could I get it done?
I don't think so. I think he's got that beer belly, and he's, I think he's drinking a lot. He doesn't feel pain. So you could go at him as much as you'd want. I don't think you're making a dent. I think you could go at him with everything, and he's just sitting there just like, I'm numb all over. And then he'd go off on you.
That sounds about right. Hang on, I got one more for you because I just saw this one. Okay. Joel Osteen. I could beat up Joel Osteen, right? I'd like to think I could beat up Joel Osteen.
He's got God on his side, so that would be a
does
tough
he though? Oh, he's like he
God or
exactly,
Satan.
He doesn't exactly practice two. What he preaches. The guy's got like what, like $100,000 jet?
Okay, then he has Satan on his side, and that's worse in my opinion.
That's true.
So I don't think it fares well for you.
He's almost to the day, 31 years older than me.
Yeah, there you go. So it'd probably be a relatively even fight now that you mention that.
Okay, I could beat up Joel Austin. You want to do one more?
I'll give you two more since you gave me two. Rapid fire. Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah, you'd beat Lenny Kravitz.
I think I'd take Lenny Kravitz. I think he's, athletic kind of, but I think he's slight.
I don't think he would know how to handle himself in a fight. I just don't think that's him.
Too artsy. I get that. This one I think is maybe the best one.
Okay.
Although given the age, because he's always been a in shape guy, Rob Lowe.
Yeah, Rob Lowe's a pretty boy though. Once you hit him in the mouth, he's gonna turtle.
Yeah, you know what? After watching Parks and Rec, I'm like, this guy.
As long as you get the first good shot in, you're good. Like if he can kind of back you down into a corner, he's in good shape. You're right. He'll take you to task. But if you get the first good shot in, he's gonna turtle. You're gonna beat him.
I think so. I think you're right. One more, Bobby Flay.
Nobody's beating up Bobby Flay. Come on. I was kind of hoping Guy Fieri was 31 years older than me. I couldn't beat up Guy Fieri.
Fieri, I think he's a little bit younger than that. I think he looks older. You know what?
You could tell me Guy Fieri is 29. You could tell me he's 59. I'd believe you.
He's one or the other.
He's 51.
It's the spikes. It's the frosted tips. It messes me up. But these will all be decent fights. I think we picked some even competitors. But overall, I don't think they're going to be as good of fighters as we figure. I think Tom Cruise is the one guy who might live up to the hype. And Keanu Reeves.
Oh, Keanu Reeves. Yeah, Keanu Reeves is going to wipe the floor with you. All right. That'll do it for us for this episode. Everybody, enjoy Game 7. We will have a recap, kind of the end of the Bruins season, for better or worse. That will probably drop, I'm going to guess, Sunday. Follow us on Twitter, @CallingPodcast, for updates. I just want to plug real quick. As many of you know, I work for the Lowell Spinners. I'll be the on-field MC this year. Season starts on Friday. LowellSpinners.com. Get your tickets if you want to come out and see a show. We got a real fun roster this year. A couple of Red Sox draft picks, so come check that out. You can find more episodes on the show on CLNSmedia.com. Click on the podcast tab and then click on the CallNet logo. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Parr. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.